Right.
It's unfortunate. Even in the in-person ones, you always have those who have great intentions. Yes, yes, yes. And then all of a sudden, missing. And then I get the notice, sorry, I'm in the hospital.
Yeah.
I just can't go because I'm having diarrhea and I can't travel that far. All of these considerations, you know?
Yeah.
Always something.
Mm-hmm.
Always something. I know.
Keeps life interesting.
Well, I say that our lives are certainly an adventure.
Yeah. Right.
We never know what's going to happen. It keeps us, you know, on our toes. We'd all be excellent ballerinas for sure.
Right.
But, yeah, challenges. Every day is a challenge, but every day is a day to be grateful for, at least in my eyes. That's how I
right.
look at it.
And I'm fortunate in that I still have more good days than bad.
That's great.
And as long as that continues, I'm content because I know there are a lot of people who can't say that.
Yeah.
Of course, I've redefined what a good day is.
Yes, yes, yes. It's like what is normal in our lives. Certainly,
right.
the outside world would look at this and go, oh, my gosh, what are you doing? But that's what I'm going to be talking about a little bit in the introduction is about that whole thing of what becomes normal for us and trying to make our lives somewhat of a quality life. I'm going to begin
right.
actually right now, and then we'll have the others just join in. You all know me on the line, I believe, correct? Is there anybody
yes.
who doesn't know me? Yes, yes, yes. Loretta, you know me?
I know you. Yeah.
Okay. Aren't you lucky? Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yeah. Quite lucky. We really are. I want to know that one meal. What is that one meal you have a day? I felt so bad. I said, oh, my God.
Oh, don't feel
one
badly
meal
for me.
A day. What is
no.
that meal?
It's something.
It has to be nutritious, right?
Yeah. It's something certainly do not advocate for anybody. So I'm always a little bit hesitant to tell anybody because it takes me hours to eat. But at least, like feeding our dogs, we always know what I'm going to have. So the only one, and I love cooking. So I love cooking for my husband and family and anybody who needs help with the cooking part. But I've been eating the same thing for years now, and it just consists of, and please do not do this. This is against anything that I would say to somebody. I have dried puff rice. And then I have...
Oh, that's okay. I won't.
Okay. And then I have baby food squash. And then I have like a broth, like a bouillon. And I begin eating while at the table, but I have to be in a nightgown because everything just gets worse. During that time when I'm at the table, at any moment I can begin to gag and not be able to swallow, not be able to breathe. And then I take a little bit more, and then I lie down in bed with my head elevated, and then I become, a lot of the autonomic stuff can kick in even more so. So the passing out, the inability, the tremors, my whole body shakes. And it takes me hours just to finish the little bit that I consume. And during the evening, multiple times, and it's gotten worse, I will all of a sudden wake up from breathing because I can't breathe. And it's food and liquid that aspirates into my lungs. So,
oh,
but I've been living that way for years, and
yeah.
don't feel bad for me. I think when it first all started happening, it was just so frightening, and I'm still unsettled because I never know when it's going to happen. It can
mm-hmm.
happen even when I'm not eating, but it seems at night or as soon as I consume anything, it just begins to become very exacerbated. Sometimes the pain is so great that my husband, from the pseudo-obstruction, that I literally crawl on the floor. My husband has to help me into bed. But he's constantly waking up and saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And I just, my hat goes out to him. I'm so blessed to have a wonderful husband. But
yeah.
the nervousness that it causes him.
I'm sitting here with one of my staples. This is Candace. I drink 4 or 5 Boost shakes a day, and it takes me 30 to 45 minutes to get down the Boost shake to make sure that it'll stay down.
Yeah.
And also to make sure, because I also have short gut syndrome. So if I want to make sure that it doesn't just flush
right out
entirely, I have to drink it very slowly.
Yeah. Well, with some people with the gastroparesis pot, they have issues with the, I know you have the short gut as well, but some patients only are affected by solids. But through research, I am affected by both, so I can get full on liquids and solids. But some people, the bulk of people seem to be with solids. However, new research is showing that there is a patient population that is just affected with liquids. And then there are people like us who have the worst of both worlds. So
the double whammy.
But, yeah, exactly. So it's a challenge. It definitely is a challenge. But again, we do, or many of us do, after a time, learn to, even though you never know what's going to happen, you learn to somewhat integrate it into the life. And that's what I just wanted to kind of share with you on this, aiming the topic a bit. But integrating motility into the lives, that's probably one of the most difficult things to do, because your life revolving around a digestive tract that is always in question. It's unpredictable. It impacts every aspect of your life. It's a challenge. And it becomes a constant battle of what wins at any given moment. And it is at any given moment. Sometimes the gut wins and ends up governing your entire day. And then other times your willpower wins and you may be able to overcome some of the suffering in order to be productive. And sometimes, you know, things like Candace is in a mode where it's somewhat stabilized, and then it's kind of a win-win. There are times when you have to let go, and other times when you have to push through it and forward, and it's a moment-to-moment, day-in, day-out war. Because of this unpredictable nature, it's difficult to discern whether you need to go out of the house or have to go out of the house, whether to go to a social event, whether to even go to a supermarket or a department store, hard to make plans, accomplish things on time, and the list goes on and on. I know in my case, when I first became ill, I have to say that the agony of the symptoms and my quest to find a definitive diagnosis ruled every aspect of my breathing life. And it took many years before that diagnosis was obtained. But even now, as my symptoms progress and new unexplainable symptoms come, and I'm still trying to find more diagnoses, it continues to be a juggling act. Throughout the years, of course, it's been difficult because you have to let go of doing the work that I love to do, saying goodbye to the enjoyment of food, saying goodbye to travel, prospects of having a family, and mourning the loss of my previous life. But eventually, there came a point through determination and unrelenting faith in the support of my family that my outlook on life changed. And I learned to release what I can do, what I can't do, surrendering what is physically possible or not, in order to have a quality life. I still struggle with the expectations because I always have high expectations for myself, and when those aren't met, and being a perfectionist, it's very frustrating. So that's the thing I struggle with, but I realize I don't have control over it. Socially, my husband and I don't go out very much at all. We certainly don't go out, like early afternoon is the limit. We do not go out late afternoon or evenings. We haven't for years. When I do attend a social event, I drink that very, very weak tea, so at least I can enjoy treasured moments with the people that I love. because if I didn't, then I'd be losing all of these. And these are just strategies that I worked out in my own life in order to be a participant and not a spectator in life. And then, of course, I have this organization. It's certainly not the work that I was doing, but the pay, and the pay is not dollars, but the rewards are certainly far greater. I've tried to accept the things that I'm able to change and release what I can't. And there are days when the disease wins out and I must relinquish to the overwhelming symptoms, knowing there's so much that I was supposed to do and didn't accomplish. But if I continue to hold on to the negative, I will end up mentally in a place that I just refuse to go. On the days I'm able to do more, I celebrate in my heart, but the battle obviously continues. So I ask you today if you've been able to at least at times integrate your digestive motility issues into your life. And if so, how have you done so? And if you haven't been able to, you're still struggling with that, let us know. Or you can talk about any other topic or bring questions that are unrelated to that. But at least there's a point of, I think, anybody can relate to. I know there are a lot of people who, once you think you have it integrated into your life, and then it goes into exacerbation, or you get a new symptom, or you get a new illness, you have to work through all of that process again.
Right.
I know, Candace, you...
Yep. What?
Yep.
Go ahead.
And Candace, thank you. I just wanted to remind me to make sure that you give your first name during the call so that we can address the voice with the name.
Right.
Go ahead, Candace. You're
this
on.
This is Candace. I was going to jump into that. I know that if I have a social event to go to, no matter how short the time is going to be, I don't eat or drink beforehand. I keep water on hand because I suffer from dry mouth from all the meds that I take. But if I'm going to be out, I don't eat for a couple of hours beforehand so that my symptoms are more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning of July, I'm doing something which I'm not completely sure I'm up for. I'm mentally I'm up for it. I don't know whether physically I'm going to be able to handle it, but I'm doing a children's poetry workshop for grades.
Oh, wonderful.
Grades 3 through 6.
Great.
Yeah, but it's
excellent.
3 hours a day for 5 days.
Hard to make a commitment when you don't know, and your energy level, you don't know how that's going to be.
Right, right. I'm also on TPN, in addition to what I can eat orally, so that helps me a lot. Through things like this, I make sure that I run my TPN, the night before I have something to do so that I have a little extra energy.
I'm only on four nights
TPN, so.
That's great. I know a lot of patients, and I know, of course, I do, but along with all the GI symptoms is this lethargy that comes into play. And sometimes that lethargy, if you don't know what that is, that extreme tiredness, goes into what I call malaise. And malaise is it's a debilitating type of weakness and tiredness, fatigue, that to move a pencil from one, do they still use pencils now that computers are in existence? But move a pencil from one place to another can be a major effort. The ability to focus and understand what you're reading, it becomes impossible. You could
right.
read the same sentence over and over and over and not even remember what the heck you read. And a lot of that can go with the GI motility. Has anybody else been able to integrate it or struggling to integrate this, their world?
No, I don't have that. I have, no. Not yet. See, I think I'm in the beginning stages of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yes. Yeah. This is Loretta.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. I'm trying. Is this definitely do people, everybody's different with this?
Yes.
Well,
because does it get worse over time?
It is. And this is another frustration. In fact, I was talking to a patient yesterday all about this. And one of the biggest frustrations, we have so many, but one of the big ones is that what works for one patient may not work for another. So a med may work for Candace. It may not work for you or I. It may not work for Enam. If you, these are the people that are on the call, but we also have some other people who haven't
introduced. Pam was here too, and I wanted to know what you meant by integrate, so I didn't respond.
So you came in late. It was trying to learn to integrate all that encompasses digestive motility, the symptoms, the social aspect, the relationship to every aspect of it into your life to give your life some sort of quality and normalcy so that you're able to function and be productive and enjoy your life at, you know, to the best of your ability. A lot of people, as they're learning to accept their illness, have a lot of trouble with that. Those who have learned to integrate it into their life, like I've done little strategies, my family is very well trained. They know that if they know to have everything early, even my nieces who are getting married, one got married, the other one is getting married next month, made sure that instead of having an evening wedding, they had it early enough so at least I could be present, if not for the whole thing, at least part of it. I mean, I just have the most incredible family. So there are strategies. I know with myself, I don't eat all day, which is not a good strategy. However, that allows me to be a little more productive than the minute that food enters my mouth. So those are the strategies. And then Loretta was just talking, because she's a newbie at all of this, and she was wondering about the individual, if it's individual in everybody. And that's what I was just focusing on with her, that treatments can be varied. Along with treatments, some patients just have, and I use just loosely because having gastroparesis is not a party. It's serious. But if you have the gastroparesis, some people just have it in the stomach. They don't have it. They don't have reflux with it. They don't have intestinal involvement. And they're able to kind of manage it eventually. In other patients, it may progress. And it also depends on if it's secondary to something, meaning if you have a gastroparesis as a result of surgery or you had it as a result of a diabetes, secondary causes. Or if it's genetic in nature, too. So there are so many aspects of it. So just because you hear somebody saying they have gastroparesis and they really, the symptoms are just awful, that doesn't mean that's going to happen to you. I have pseudo-obstruction. I can talk to another patient with pseudo-obstruction and though we share common threads, we have some patients who are actually exercising and being able to function and I'm saying, my God, how the heck do they do that? So, you know, it's amazing. Then you have others that are totally bedridden by it. So, it just depends. So don't panic and say, oh, my God, this is going to be my life and it's going to get worse. There are chances in your case at this point. We may be able to do it. And another consideration, Loretta, is that you might find that, and again, this is the unpredictable part, that you finally find something that works for you. You may be juicing things and say, well, I can tolerate this or I can tolerate this food. And then the next time you have it, you say, oh, my gosh, what was I thinking? It's really a struggle to eat it. So there are so many variables in it. But don't panic because you have it. And you're still trying to learn to, you're learning about it. And that's part of accepting it and trying to integrate it into your life. And I commend you for trying to learn as much as you can about it. Some things that you read on the internet.
Well, you have to educate yourself. you know, in every aspect of it. And I'm just trying to see where this is going, because I had to deal with lupus, and so I already know the track of that one. And then this, the doctor says that the food doesn't digest correctly, and it goes into the, unless I'm saying this correctly, the lower, the next, the smaller intestines, and then causes I have like a deformity in my bowels are all twisted together. The bowels and the intestines is a mess. So that makes for bacterial overgrowth. So it's, like you say, eating is not pleasurable, and either is the other end either.
Right.
No, but I, what causes the vomiting? I just experienced it something new. You know, but it seems to be connected with the bowel.
Well,
okay, so you're having a lot of vomiting?
Cramping, yeah. Well, just only when I have, I take a laxative, and then I get this horrible cramping, and it makes me vomit, too. So I don't know if that has anything to do with gastric freezes. Some people have vomiting, right?
Yeah, I do,
yeah.
Candace.
Yeah, make sure you say your first names as you speak, or if you don't want to use your first name, your real first name, you can make up a name that you always wanted to be.
What causes the vomiting? Not everybody has. I don't. When I eat something, I don't vomit, but some people do. Is that something that comes on later?
No.
Not necessarily. I'm sorry, Candace.
Go ahead.
Not necessarily. I was going to say one of the things that I've learned is not to borrow trouble. Just because somebody else is having a symptom doesn't mean that I'm necessarily going to have that same symptom. And I think that one of the things that makes gastroparesis so frustrating for the patient and for the doctor is the fact that symptoms vary so widely between patients and even in the same patient from day to day. So you can't... You can't assume that you're going to have all the problems that somebody else does.
Is this Pam?
Yes.
Pamela?
One of the things that hasn't been mentioned much in the meetings I've come to is along with the gastroparesis and the reflux and the intestinal motility disorders, some of the patients, such as myself, have the lack of motility and the flaccid bladder, and you're susceptible to lots of urinary tract infections. Like today, my plan was to do a couple of errands, and I had a yoga class planned, and I was looking forward to it. I've been having these symptoms. I had a urinary tract, I had a urinalysis and culture done last Thursday. A long holiday weekend. We're still having symptoms, but I'm like, you know, optimistic, like maybe it's just the fact that I can't empty the bladder. Maybe it's really not infected. I'll just, you know, have to go with my body. And then today, before I got to the yoga class, I had to pull over for the phone call, and the doctor's office said, yeah, the infection was confirmed. I have to go on the antibiotic. And I'm like, okay, Chicago is where I'm headed on Friday for that opinion with the GI motility specialist, and I don't know how I'm going to make it because I'm in the bathroom every half hour now anyway, so it's a long trip for me. So I'm like, all right, take care of me today. So go home, get your antibiotic, get your fluids, get your rest for a couple of days. Think positive. You'll be going to Chicago on Friday. But, you know, to have every, it just seems like every system that's involved with consumption and elimination.
Yeah,
this is
Candace. I've also got a neurogenic bladder.
But that's what they call it, and they call it flaccid bladder, and then they call it hypotonic bladder. I mean, in every report, every time a surgeon goes in, they do some kind of a scan that shows that each radiologist chooses to call it whatever.
Yeah, mine is, Candace, again, mine is that my bladder just stopped functioning. I stopped being able to empty it. And when it first started, I had incredible pain and went to the ER. and they cathed me and got out over 3 liters of fluid. Now, the normal bladder has 300 to 500 cc's capacity.
500 for a full, but I've had them take between 1 and 2 out multiple times in ER. But
right.
That's usually been when I've had, like, a food obstruction that's gone into, like, probably a real obstruction where there's blood coming out of my stoma, so that's really tight. And then there's no way you can relax the bladder to empty any.
Yeah, well, I self-cath.
I have for 12 years now.
Yeah,
I have self-cath. And then that's not always easy either. It kind of limits where you go.
Well, except I found in a way it's helpful because on a long car ride, my husband has to stop to pee before I do because my bladder just expands and expands and expands until I cath it, so I can go like a camel. I can go forever. So in a way, it's got a positive side.
How do you avoid the infection that goes along with that oftentimes?
My doctor put me on 50 milligrams of macrodantin daily. If I have an infection, he gives me 500 milligrams of macrodantin. But in 12 years of self-cathing, I've only had 2 UTIs.
Wow. You're so lucky.
And
I know, that's unusual.
I think it's because of that prophylactic dose of macrodantin that I take daily. So it's something you might mention to your doctor that you've heard somebody else have success with that.
And Pamela, I'm glad you brought that up because even with food obstruction, because my bladder is affected as well, there are many patients who have the bladder affected, and that goes for children as well. We have some children who I just heard from one from the UK, and she was saying what are the options of having either a catheter implanted or having just a general catheter, which would be more beneficial, and what are the causes and effect of each one. So with all of the other physical symptoms, to have the bladder as part of it and then to have to go on antibiotics and then have bacterial overgrowth, it's like all of these layers that you have to deal with, and it certainly is not easy. Certainly not easy. And you do then begin to fear, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? You have to go to Chicago. How are you going to even get on the plane?
Along with the infection, you always have the nausea, the achiness, the low-grade fever, the headache. But you take the antibiotic, and then it causes more cramping. And sometimes the antibiotic can cause, you know, constipation, sometimes it can cause diarrhea, and my motility is so bad already that, you know, and then you have to time the antibiotic. If you're taking some kind of supplement that has magnesium or calcium in it, and it just gets so, like, pretty soon, you know, it's hard to avoid that. You know, your life revolves just around your health sometimes, but for me, the one thing I prioritize is spending time with the grandsons and my son who lives in this state. My daughter lives more than 2,000 miles away. There is almost, other than my husband who I live with, there's almost nothing more important than that. And so while I used to do a lot of volunteer work, tutoring and such, this is a time that's very critical in my life as a grandmother, and I choose to make that my priority. So.
And that's wonderful because sometimes
I'm expecting my first grandchild.
Oh, Candace, congratulations in advance. I think when you have other people, for example, if you do have that wonderful family, loving family, it really, really does make a difference. And I know in my case, I drew strength from them because I was trying to protect them and not have them see the suffering. And from doing that, like a protective thing, I got stronger. So when you have that to keep in your mindset that, wow, I have these wonderful grandchildren, I have a grandchild on the way, it can change your focus. And the other stuff, well, I know going to a doctor appointment is very important, but you need to prioritize your life. And I think that's one of the biggest things I learned in my life is what to stress about, what not. If you throw up in public, if you have that pain in public, if you have diarrhea, if you have all of those things which can possibly happen, the worst thing, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You know, I mean, yes, you might be embarrassed, but people are going to get over it. It's hard on the emotional part, on the patient, but I know that we try to learn as many strategies. I always say, just as soon as I have to go someplace, tell me where the bathroom's at. Just let me know so that I'm nearby so that, and I'm on crutches, so it's not like I can fly to the restroom, but I always want to make sure that it's nearby. And Loretta, I want to just tell you, with all the things you're hearing, and it's great to educate yourself, I don't want you to think that all of this is happening, because sometimes even with the internet or with reading things or listening to people, you can all of a sudden get into a panic and say, oh, my God. I can sense that from you, and I know that, but I think so many of us have been living with this for so long. I don't think you have any other rather newbies in this. Am I correct in that? Everybody has had this for an amount of time. And Loretta, how long has your journey been with this?
Maybe a year. It was a slow process because I just stopped eating because anything that I ate, it hurt. So I was losing weight, and that's what caused. I went to the doctor, and I was really getting hungry, you know. But I was actually stopped. I was not eating, so, and I was going downhill. But it was about a year, I think, I've been with this. But I'm still, I went to the doctors, and he said, how's your stomach? I said, fine. That's what I do. Why? Am I in denial? I don't want it. I want it to go away. I think that's what it is, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Well, I understand. I mean, through the acceptance process, and it's a long process, it's just like you have had a death in your family. That's the psychological process that you continually go through. But until you reach that point of acceptance, that's when you gain even more control. When you're still rebelling against it and you're in disbelief and all of the emotions are colliding and you say, you know, I can't believe this is happening to me. Is this the way my world is? Am I never going to be able to be normal again? All of that is part of the process. But there's hope, and that's what I keep on saying to everybody. With gastroparesis, there's so much research going on.
Right.
That there's hope, and you can hear, I mean, I've been living with pseudo obstruction for over 30 some odd years. With that came came gastroparesis, the malabsorption, the esophageal, all of that other stuff, the bladder, and all the other illnesses. And so through all of those things, there's a lengthy time to be able to say, all right, I get the picture. This is what we have to do. This is what we have to do. But through that time when I was rebelling so much and saying, no, this can't be, I won't let it be, it took a while. And then when you think, I've got it, and then boom, all of a sudden something happens and you go, oh, no, this can't be happening. This isn't my life. So it's an up and down process. But I think once you do come to terms and you still are a newbie at this, whether it's 2 years, you're still a newbie, you'll be better able to emotionally handle it as well as physically. But it's not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a different type of world for you.
Right,
Mary Angela. Yeah, Loretta, this is Candace. I just wanted to say, deal with the symptoms as they come. Don't worry about the symptoms you don't have yet, because that just leads you down the road to depression and giving up. Instead, deal with the symptoms that you do have and know that they're doing research they're coming up with new motility drugs for gastric motility. They're old tried and true medications that work. There are procedures like the Botox injections that I get every 10 weeks that can help your stomach to empty into your small intestine. There are gastric pacemakers. There are surgeries. There's, you know, lots of things that can be used to help manage your symptoms.
Loretta, and then we'll get to Enam, and Enam, I haven't forgotten you, but Loretta, has the doctor given you any treatments or anything that he feels might be helpful to you?
The Motilium, I take those mm-hmm. four pills, and I was just saying that's it.
That's
and
it,
it's
called Motilium?
Right,
yeah. That's Domperidone. Yeah.
Right.
Am I saying it right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all I can eat. Yeah, a half hour mm-hmm. before you take a pill.
So
yeah.
Does that
that's
help
that's
you?
Really. Well, you bet. Yeah, and I also take Prilosec.
Okay, and does that help you?
Because, well, it depends. Sometimes I can digest a meal. It seems all right. And other times mm-hmm. I can eat the same meal and I'm dying.
Yeah. Do you eat slowly?
Yeah.
Do you eat slowly, and do you
small,
eat
and very small portions?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm so starving. You're right. I'm so hungry. I'll eat it, and then I'll go, oh my god! Like about a few minutes. It takes a while, and all of a sudden I go, oh my god! It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just part of it. Yeah. I guess. You know, I'm trying to get used to it. You think I'd be used to it, don't you?
No,
I would.
None of us here would. It does take a long time. And just keep in mind, Loretta, this may not be the way it's going to be always. It depends. And I don't know if the doctor has discussed any other things like the Botox or taking.
No, not yet.
They're using acupuncture in it. They're using different types of acupuncture. They're using all different types of different therapies that they're experimenting with. Because you're at the beginning,
you're just at the beginning
and you're on two meds there, it's you're still early. There may be something that you'll end up doing, and then you go, oh, my God, I feel great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
get away. Has he been on for the bacterial overgrowth in the intestine?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying this right, in the bowel and everything. I'm on three different antibiotics every month. I also take them every month for that. But that's it.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, compared to what I feel so bad, I mean,
it varies from patient to patient. Because you read it or hear somebody, it doesn't mean it's going to happen to you.
If it does, it does. I just wanted to know what to expect next. I don't know.
Well, nobody knows.
No one knows.
This may be the way, you know, it's just going to be within the stomach, although it sounds like you have some reflux going on there because you're on the Prilosec. And that maybe you'll be eventually able to manage that. We don't know.
Yeah, he said Barrett's esophagus. He did the endoscopy, and I've got a problem with that. I guess he's got to watch.
Okay. So they'll need to watch that. Yeah. Well, they'll need to watch that all the time. So you'll have frequent endoscopies. But also what a lot of patients experience is that in some cases, the gastroparesis can go into a remission, and then you feel great and you can eat anything, and then it may come back, and sometimes it doesn't, because the gut is governed by so many systems within your body. It just has a mind of its own. in brief terms, it just has a mind of its own. It's something you can't control, like your heartbeat, but all of the symptoms, hormonal, the enteric, parasympathetic, sympathetic, autonomic, all of those things have a big effect on it. So you just never know, but you keep on. I know it's probably too late for you, but you need to approach it with a calmness you need to approach it without the panic of, oh, my God, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to me? Nobody knows the going part. You just know that where you are now, trying to learn to adjust, eat, do all of the things that you need to do in order to come to a place right now in your life to live a quality life. Don't worry about tomorrow. We don't know what can happen tomorrow.
Right.
We just don't know. But I know, and I've talked to so many people like that, the minute they hear somebody else or they have this or they read it, they're in panic mode. So I understand and truly I get it. But the gastroparesis, there's just so much going on with research. They're diagnosing so many people with this now. It's in the news. So you're in good company. And go ahead. You're on.
What I was going to say is, yeah, with me, it's difficult trying to, with me having the cerebral palsy and the gastroparesis, never knowing the gastroparesis has gone from my stomach to my colon and abdomen, and so I have the incontinence. It's difficult trying to integrate, but I try to, with social events, I try to, if I'm going to go out somewhere, I pick the people that are going to help me to, you know, because some people will help me with the bathroom, other people won't. So I'm very picky about who will help me. Also, I try to, I have these Ziploc bags that are here, and I have them, and I have them right by me. So if I need to get sick, I get sick, and I zip up the bags and just wait for the next time that happen. I, you know, I just deal with it the best I can. I volunteer from my home. I try to listen to music or volunteer from my home for different organizations to try to keep busy. It has been challenging because not only with the paresis now, but I also have arthritis in my legs. And so for longer distances, anywhere I go, I use a wheelchair to get around. So I just try to make the best of it that I can. And
you said it, Candace. You said it there. You make the best of it. You make the best that you can out of each and every day.
Yep, exactly. Loretta, I want to ask you one more question, and then I want to make sure that other people, Pamela, but Loretta. Oh, gosh, I hope I remember what the heck I was going to say. I was waiting so long to tell you, to ask you this. Backtrack. Well, while I'm trying to get my brain in gear, does anybody else have something that they would like to contribute to the meeting or respond to? Loretta, I'll get that. Oh, Loretta, I remember. Did the doctor give you a cause for your gastroparesis?
A what?
A cause.
Like, how did you get it?
Oh, the cause?
Yes.
No, he thought it might have been lupus. But he's not, you know, they're not 100% on that. You know,
okay.
There was no cause. I was going to ask you that. There was no cause.
Okay,
yeah,
so
how many of us have been diagnosed as idiopathic?
Me.
But there is certainly an overlap between lupus and the gastroparesis and the pseudo-obstruction of the small intestine.
Yeah, and so I shouldn't say I have chronic idiopathic intestinal pseudo-obstruction, which in my case progressed. But depending on that cause, and I must say this, that, and you'll hear me speak about this a lot in the meetings, but mitochondrial disease, so that's in the headlines of note. But mitochondrial disease can be a big factor in having the connection with pseudo-obstruction, with gastroparesis, with multiple sclerosis, with even arthritis and diabetes. They're doing so much research on that area. So if that is the cause, then they're working on research to help that. And if that were the cause, or even working with lupus, if they find a treatment for that lupus, that may, in fact, help your GI problem. So it all depends on the progress and cause. There are too many unknown factors.
I know. I wondered what caused it, because stress.
Stress doesn't cause it. It can aggravate it.
No. Well, there you go. How about, all right, so I don't know, because my lupus is under control right now.
How long have you had lupus?
Since I was 38, and I'm 63. So.
38.
And excuse me, do you take a biologic drug for the lupus? Or do you take some type of a steroid or methotrexate? Or?
Are you talking to me, Loretta?
Yes, I forgot your name.
Oh, yeah, no, for lupus?
Yeah.
No, I used to take certain drugs when it affected a lot of organs, but it's been better now, so I don't take anything now for it. So that's why I'm good.
So the lupus is sort of in remission.
Yeah, they said to say it's under control. I don't know. I used to say remission, and they look at me, and I thought it was a good answer, remission, but it can come back.
Maybe it's not, huh? Yeah. Remission just means like a temporary break in symptoms that it never makes.
Right, that's what I thought. That's the word I used, which I thought was correct.
But they're just saying
it's
under control, but they're not treating it with anything, no medicine.
They're not, no.
Well,
no, it's attacked my heart, my lungs, and my kidneys, and my blood. It's thickened it. But I'm good now. So,
that's good news.
Wow.
If that can respond and improve, why can't
you
know the problems, and maybe they will.
Right.
Nice.
And there are some people who get gastroparesis after a virus or bacterial infection, and from what I understand, those can go into spontaneous remission and the symptoms just disappear entirely.
This is not amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought once you had this, that was it.
No, I've learned this through Inspire, through the website, people's experiences. Several people have posted that they've had viral gastroparesis and that it's disappeared.
Yeah. So I mean, there are so many causes of it. So many. I mean, if you're a diabetic, you have a propensity to have it. Surgery, certain medications can cause that. And of course the lupus. But those are just some, and the virus. So, I mean, there are just so many potential causes of it. But, you know, as Pamela was saying, there is definitely a connection, lupus with gastroparesis, a potential connection, I should say. So, you're at the beginning of your journey, definitely.
But you're not alone.
But she's been on a journey already with the lupus.
Yeah. The what? Yeah, exactly. The lupus is that's a huge thing to overcome. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many of us on this call have other diseases along with our GI motility problem? Like I know Inam, she has. Yeah, Pamela, what do you have?
Arthritis,
okay. Autoimmune, yep.
The rheumatoid arthritis, so it's inflammatory, so it involves a lot of strong drugs that mess with your immunity, and it also messes with your organs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Type 2 diabetes for Candace.
Uh-huh. There you go. And Inam, you have the cystic fibrosis.
The cerebral palsy and the
blindness. Cerebral palsy, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the blindness and some arthritis,
So all of us, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every patient has all of these illnesses and they get that. It's just that there is a connection with all of these things. Sometimes even a medication, and then you get off that medication and the gut begins to respond again. But truly there are many, many more treatments and potential treatments in the future that are looking very promising for patients. So you need to be a patient, patient.
Well, that's a good one. Yes.
But hard. It's extremely difficult, and we all can attest to that. As we're talking here, all of us seasoned veterans there, and we're saying, yeah, I've been there, done that. But we know what that's like at the very beginning, and as you can hear from this, all of us still struggle with that. And look at poor Pamela. She said, go to a doctor appointment that I'm sure she's waited a long time for. Mm-hmm. And now everything gets in question. It's tough, but go ahead, Enam.
Loretta, just so you know, it took me, I started having symptoms in 2002, and it didn't find out until July of 2004 what was wrong with me, and we had to go to three different doctors and all these different tests just to find out exactly what was wrong, because they didn't know. So it may take a while for them to find out, but keep hanging in there and do the best you can, and hang in there the best you can, and you're not alone with this.
Well, thank you. You're very nice.
Yeah. Nobody is alone, even though at moments you might feel alone, but then you sit back and go, yeah, but I know that this patient's going through this, and I know others. But it's I'm so sorry that all of you have to go through so much suffering. I really, really am. I know your lives have all been changed as a result of everything that you've gone through. And I also understand when you have a digestive problem, which can also affect your bladder, it makes life a struggle socially. It makes it difficult because you want to eat and you're unable to. You can't enjoy food and activities that perhaps you were able to. But again, if you have those grandchildren, potential grandchildren, you have loved ones in your life, it's all worthwhile. It's worth the fight. It's worth the journey. Just keep on fighting and plugging through it, because with every obstacle, you can look back and learn from it, and then you're better equipped to go through a similar experience later on, or like in this case, helping Loretta and telling her, it'll all be okay, Loretta. You just need time and calmness. Easy. I know words are hollow when
easy
you're in
to
that
say.
State. Yeah, they're very, very hollow to the person who's in that mode. I know, but from all of us here who have been through it, we certainly get it, and we've all been there. That I'm confident that we share. On that note, I'm afraid we're going to have to. Gee, this time went by very fast, but I'm going to have to. Yeah, it really went by quickly. I just want Candace to read your poem, and then Candace brings to the table all these poems that she wrote. So today she's going to read that poem, and then right after that I want to just say some closing words, and then we'll end the program. Candace?
The eating time one?
Yes.
Okay. I wrote this one shortly after starting with the Botox treatments. Before I had my first Botox injection, I couldn't even keep down a half a cup of rice. I was vomiting it up, and even my Boost shakes were very hard to keep down. So that's when I wrote Eating Time. Food has so long been my enemy, bringing me nausea and pain.
Yeah.
Everything that I'd get down would quickly come back up again. I've had a procedure designed to help, and I'm beginning to feel insane. The food I longed for is safe to eat, and weight I should rapidly gain. But now I have no appetite, have to force down the little I eat. After such a long absence, one would think that eating would be a treat. But once forbidden foods fail to entice, be they sour or salty or sweet. I feel like the mother of a recalcitrant child, as my mind I implore and entreat. I try to entice my mind to try harder, to just settle down and eat. Where it will end, I do not know. 2 pounds gained and 8 to go. Still, I see food and my mind says no. I force the matter, but progress is slow. My calorie count disgustingly low. I need to want to eat again so I can get off TPN. Now I must end this little rhyme because right now it's eating time.
Beautifully. What a great, great poetess. Thank you for sharing that, Candace.
Thank you.
Beautiful. And what I also wanted to just remark on something that a question was tossed out before about some having nausea with gastroparesis versus having vomiting. Some patients with gastroparesis only have nausea. Some patients have both. So there's no concise thing saying that you have gastroparesis, you should have this. It may not be that type of patient who experiences that. And on that note, I'd like to thank you all for joining us here today and sharing all of your experiences and providing the support to those in need. I'm always so humbled by the graciousness of patients helping each other while trying to obtain help in their own lives, and also those who share their experiences and their fears and questions. It's so, so humbling for me. And in my eyes, as I always close with, you truly are amazing, tremendous heroes. And I'm extremely grateful for the honor of having you here today and sharing a piece of your world. And on that note, I hope you will join us. Tomorrow we have the gastroparesis group, and that's at 12 to 1. So that's specifically for patients just with gastroparesis, not just because there are other diseases you may have, but if you have gastroparesis, that's the one to go to. On the 31st, we have our support group, which is an in-person one that meets in Massachusetts. And then in June, I hope that all of you got the calendars, but if not, they'll be sent to you either via email or in person. I mean, yeah, I'm going to hand deliver it via mail. But in June, we are introducing our first fecal incontinence one. Those patients who have urinary incontinence are also welcome to attend that.
Okay.
And, but it's all on the internet. If you have a chance to go up there, you can look. And if you don't have access to the internet, you can always just call me and say, what's an upcoming program? I really thank you so much. You have just all been amazing, and I appreciate you being here. And Pamela, when are you going for your appointment to Chicago?
This Friday, and it's in the afternoon.
Extra prayers for you, and we want to know how you do on your journey there, at your appointment, and going back. I pray that things stabilize enough for you to really go through with that appointment. Candace, thank you so much for sharing your poetry and being so helpful and supportive. Inam, you always bring such great things to the table, and your compassion shines through. And Loretta, you're dealing with a lot right now, but I really heartfully appreciate your willingness to really have the courage to share all of that fear and all of the anxiety that you're going through that so many of us can certainly relate to. And hopefully we were able to answer some of your questions and provide at least momentarily, because I know as soon as you hang up, it's going to be all over, but momentarily a little sense of relief. May God bless you all, and I hope that you'll join us at our next meeting. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, Mary Angela. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.